Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is your girl, Donna D, a.k.a. The Urban Mommy, and I am back with another podcast. Today, I am joined by Miss Joanne, and she has an awesome story. The last couple of podcasts, we have been talking about relationships, toxic marriages, narcissists, and all of, you know, and everything with it. So today, we're going to continue that conversation because I want you all to see that this is more common than you think it is. A lot of people have went through it, and they have persevered. So don't give up if you're going through it. Miss Joanne, welcome.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, I didn't even know the word narcissism till about 3 years ago, which is same. Off my radar. I said, oh yeah, that's what I've been going through.
That's exactly the same story. I think I was telling that to someone else on the podcast. I was like, I didn't even know what the narcissist was. And when I did think about what a narcissist was, I always thought it was just someone that had a huge ego. I didn't know about all the other stuff that most of us deal with and we didn't know.
Right, so, right. Can you until I saw my therapist sign.
That part.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that's it. Can I tell you what? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am 69. I live in Portland, Oregon. I have a grown daughter and 3 grandchildren. I own my own bookkeeping business, and I've been doing that for over 40 years. And I've written 1 book about my marriages and some other cool stuff I do. And now I'm writing book 2 all about the narcissist in my life. So, and yeah. He's now out of my life. So,
congratulations. Okay.
Thank you.
So let's just get started. Just tell us a little bit about your situation with your marriage and how everything went.
Which one?
Oh, yeah, right.
There's been 7.
Seven,
yes.
Oh, well, that's more interesting than I initially thought.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you really believe in love, huh?
I do. I just kept picking the wrong men.
That's okay.
So where do you want me to start?
Wherever you want to start.
I'll give you some background. Yeah, sure. Let's see. I grew up in the 50s and 60s, you know, with the image of the white picket fence, and you grow up and you marry Mr. Right and you become a mommy and you get to stay home and while he goes off to work and that's all great and everything's going to be hunky dory. My family was not exactly that way, the one I grew up in. And then I joined the Mormon Church when I was 12, and you grow up in this image that, you know, you're supposed to get married, have babies, everybody's going to be fine. And you don't get to have sex before you're married, and you don't get to live with each other before you're married. And I thought, well, if I just pick somebody in the church, then he's going to naturally be a great husband because we go to the same church. So we obviously believe the same things. We're just naturally going to want to raise our family the same way. Well, that doesn't turn out to be true either. And I often did not select, I didn't court long enough to really, you know, get the hormones out of the way and really find out what they really were like and really talk about the hard stuff. So I was married to 5 different Mormons who all turned out to be abusive in one way or the other. And two non-members, one committed suicide, and that's my father's daughter. And number 7, we were together for like 25 years. He's in prison, and he turned out to be a narcissist. So I've been through financial abuse, physical abuse, a lot of emotional, mental, verbal abuse. So
wow,
lots of experience.
Yeah, that's a nice resume there. So
thank you.
are you still in the Mormon? Are you still a Mormon?
No, I left it. I was a member for 30 years. And once I met husband number 7 and we started talking about all kinds of cool, interesting things. And at first it was like, well, do I want to go sit at church for half the day, or do I want to have another visit with him? And I chose visiting with him because it was really interesting. And just for some reason, I just didn't need to be part of the church anymore. I didn't ever have any trauma with the church, just the crappy Mormon husbands that I had. And so then I just chose to not go to church anymore. So, you know, it's just, you know, no big trauma. I just chose him over going to church. And so I haven't been a Mormon for 25 years, at least. Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is probably going to be shocking or surprising to you, but my sister is actually a Mormon.
Uh-huh. No, nothing surprises me.
Right. So, I mean, I learned a little bit about it, but I know if someone does something, they will ostracize them. So in your situations with your husbands, with the ones that were unsuccessful, the five Mormons, were they never, like, shunned upon? No one was ever upset with them?
You know, at church, they looked great. The public face is often different than at home. And I remember husband number three, before he really got physically abusive, he had some anger issues and he'd never been married before. And here I am, and I've got a toddler, and he's not used to being a dad. But he came home from work one day and was really angry, and he proceeded to walk around our mobile home and broke every single window. And I went to the church leader and I said, what do I do? This is scary. And, well, do you think he'll hit you? And I go, well, he hasn't yet. I don't think so. You know, and then I just kind of dropped it. And so, no, they didn't even talk to him. And we moved to Ohio. We were in California, and then we moved to Ohio. And then physical abuse started happening, but I didn't report it, and I didn't call the police, and I didn't even call the police when he hit my little girl. To this day, I regret that. Thankfully, she has forgiven me for that, but she remembers, and she remembers every awful stepdad she's had. But, you know, we've worked through a lot of stuff, and no, it's like, I don't know what they would have done. Maybe just talk to him. But I don't know, because I didn't tell them. And, you know, finally, as I was getting ready to leave him, you know, I probably confided in the female leader, or the leader of the women's organization. But, you know, I don't even know if I told her he was hitting us. I can't even remember that point. But yeah, no. You certainly get excommunicated and ostracized, strict, if there's, you know, sexual problems, or, you know, if you're doing things that kind of, so I don't know what else they, you know, excommunicate you for, but you know, yeah. But they didn't talk to him.
The Mormons are like male heavy anyway, right? So they probably wouldn't do much. Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah, they're very male heavy. Yeah, it's, you know, the patriarch, and it's because they teach you that, you know, you're supposed to be helpmeets, because that's what it says in the Bible, I think, if I remember correctly. But you're also supposed to let the man be the head of the household, which is like, I'm fine. If you're doing a good job, great. But if you're not, I'm going to speak up because, well, I'm better at being stronger than I, you know, like I would just sit back though. And, you know, I learned to be codependent watching my mom with my alcoholic father. And I learned to be a caregiver and an enabler. So that didn't really help me. And, you know, I'd say something and we'd get in fights, and then, you know, but again, I never reported him. And even when he hit me and the doctor knew, that's what had happened. And it's like, I still never called the police. I just left finally. And I should have called the police.
Right. I mean, but it's easy to sit back now and say that. But when you are inside of a, you know, a toxic, abusive relationship, it's never that simple. So
no,
I mean,
never.
I know we always say it and we jokingly kind of guilt ourselves, but, you know, honestly, everything that happened is usually how it happens when you are inside abusive relationships. So abusive men tend to know the type of woman that they can go after. And it's the loving, the nurturers, the ones that, you know, that don't really want the public to know everything. So they may keep stuff inside. So if you are feeling bad about that, please, I mean, I'm saying please don't, but, you know, that's just what happens. That's an effect of being abused.
Yeah. And it's writing the book was very healing. So, you know, I don't feel, you know, I don't get all worked up about, you know, feeling bad about myself about that so much anymore. So
good. Okay. So with that being said, can you tell us a little bit about the first book?
The first book is called Midlife Magic, and it's under the name of Joanne Richards, my former name. And half of it is the first six husbands and what went wrong. And, you know, oh, here's a red flag, but I didn't notice it until, you know, long past. And the different kinds of abuses that we went through, and you know, again, there's, you know, a chapter on my childhood, a chapter on just, you know, why I got married so many times. Again, because I wanted that perfect little family. And, you know, I was telling my daughter, it's like, I wanted her to have a dad after her dad died. I wanted to have a happy little family. I just kept picking the wrong guys. And it's like, she and I were so much better off when I wasn't straddling her with another stepfather, because we were doing fine on our own. You know, I lived near my family finally by that time. And, you know, it would have been great if I could have found somebody that was much better suited to us, but that didn't happen when she was little. So, you know, that's part of the reason why I just kept getting married. So, you know, the book is half about the husbands. Then there's a few chapters about number seven, you know, how we met, what it's like being married to somebody in prison, and what you go through. And I, you know, he was my hero at that time because he seemed so much better than the other six. And so I really had him on a pedestal anyway. And I didn't realize that he was a narcissist till pretty much right before I left. And I, you know, it wasn't until I knew that word until after I left. And I was living in California at the time, and I didn't know, you know, I just figured, okay, it's COVID. The house is creeping me out because it's really old and it's getting really expensive. And we just need to figure things out. And I'm going to go move near my daughter during COVID because otherwise I don't get to see anybody. You know, I'm in this huge house. I work at home. I don't get to go anywhere. I've got people bringing my groceries to me. So, and then, you know, he blew up because I moved. And then it's like we went through this roller coaster, but I hadn't moved when I wrote the first book. So the first book is nice things about him. And it's how I got interested in UFOs and the military stuff about UFOs and witchcraft and fun stuff like fairies and aliens and spirits and paranormal and all these cool things that are just a part of my life. And so it's kind of like, here's my transition from that, you know, serial marriages to bad Mormons and to embracing some really new passions, which are still part of, you know, actively a part of my life, and just how I use those kind of things to embrace my better life and the life that I want and tapping into intuition and, you know, making my life the best that it needs to be for me. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So you said, what's it like to be married to someone in jail? So he was in jail when you married him or during the marriage?
The whole time. He'd already been in prison for like 10 years. And I met him because my roommate's husband was at the same prison, and she came home one day and said, oh, I met this really nice guy. He's visiting with his mom. He's really smart. He's your age. I go, oh, smart. That would be a new kind of boyfriend. And so we started writing, and then I started visiting in person, and we courted for like 5 years. So you would have thought I would have had it figured out. It's like he's, you know, it's like, but again, he, you know, we got along. We were having a great time. He was charming and educated and had great stories. And so then I just kind of fell into the pattern of helping him with his research about things he was writing. I was helping taking care of his mom because she had health problems. And then, you know, I moved into the family house with his mom so I could take care of her. And then all of a sudden she dies and I'm straddled with this big giant house that is a money pit. You know, and I paid for everything pretty much, and kept visiting him the whole time, got my bookkeeping business going as my own business. And, you know, as long as we were following his agenda and I was trying to keep up with his creative projects and what he was asking me to do, and I was visiting him regularly, everything was great. But, you know, you veer from the agenda, or you try and do things on your own that might not be his creative project, and it's like, you know, you turned your back on my needs. It's like, I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm doing all the work.
Right.
What are you doing? I mean, I shouldn't, you know, he did have a job. He had a good job. Every prison he was at. He is an honorary military veteran, and he's had some great military experiences. So I honor that part of him, but he was a lousy partner and turned out to be a really classic narcissist. You know, it's got to be his way, and all the gaslighting. And, you know, he hadn't really done that while we were married or why I was visiting in person. You know, he only got really seriously, intensely upset with me a couple times. It's like, oh, okay. And so as long as I just kept everything status quo and basically tried to do what he needed, and, you know, but as soon as I wrote my own book and it's like, oh, well, you're not taking care of, you're not working on my stuff, or you should have put that into the house. And it's like, well, the house, you know, I have been, but I'm making the money, so I should be able to put some of it into my book if I want.
Yeah, those guys, and not to put them all in a box, but most people that's been in prison, they are like master manipulators. They know, not even just the narcissistic side of it, but they know how to manipulate women. And they too have a type. They have a type, and they look for women, like, you know, nurturers that want to help, and they make it like women that, like, they need a project, you know.
That's and what it's I, funny. I like. Yeah, I wasn't looking at it like a project, and because for most of the time, you know, we were having fun talking to each other and stuff. But again, and yes, I know several guys who were like that. It's like, oh, you got five women sending you packages, and you know, it's like, you got two baby mamas coming to visit you. It's like, you know, your parents are handing you cash in the visiting room. It's like, oh my gosh.
It's,
you know, so he, you know, he never had me do anything illegal. He never asked me to do anything illegal, and I would have said no anyway.
Right.
But you know, it was this other stuff. It's like it just blew my mind. And finally, you know, my sister and my daughter were like, "Why are you still paying for those things?" It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like, and I realized it's like, I want to retire, unless he drops dead and I magically get to inherit the house, which I thought I was going to, but that's not the case. And now we're divorced. It doesn't matter anyway, but it's like, I want to retire. I started saving really late in life for retirement. And so we'll see how well that works out, but I'm still planning to retire. But it's like, dude, we're in our 60s. What's our plan?
Right.
Oh, I'm going to get out, you know, and I'll take care of you. Well, it's like, okay, you have a life without parole sentence. There's no guarantee, no matter how hard you're working on it, that you'll ever get out. So how are we going to afford retirement?
Right. So
I can't physically work till I'm 90 and then drop dead at my computer. Come on.
Right. And actually we have some similarities, because, and I was talking to like a therapist one time, and I was telling her the stories with the situations, and she said, she mentioned the same thing, and she was saying, yeah, you need a project. And I'm like, no, it's not a project. I'm just doing it because I want to. But she says that sometimes you don't realize it, but that becomes us so much.
Yes.
That we almost subconsciously find someone that needs some kind of fixing.
Well, you're absolutely right, because I didn't see it like that, but I was helping with his research. I went out on an international speaking circuit and talked about his military stuff. And now I'm just going to be talking about my stuff. And,
you're right.
You know, it's like, yes, I was doing every, it's like my whole life was visit him, work on his stuff, work, pay the bills, pay for the house repairs, and then go do these speaking things and sell these reports he had written. And it's like, huh. And I come up here to Oregon to see my family a few times a year, but it was like, okay, I can visit him for a couple hours on Christmas. Then I can run to where the family's having the holiday, and I can do Thanksgiving the same way. And it's like, you know, there were some years if he was not stationed, he wasn't in the military. If he was like it too far away to, you know, it's like I had to go like hours away to see him, then he often got priority. And, you know, I know my family felt slighted because I'm not there for Thanksgiving. And it's like, you know, we really love being together for certain holidays. And it's like, well, you're not with us. And it's like, well, I'm, you know, trying to support my husband, you know. So for the last, you know, 10, 15 years, he's been like, he was like only an hour from my house, which made it, you know, only 2 hours to go to my sister's from his where he was. So, you know, I didn't miss a lot of holidays, but I did miss some with the family.
So looking back over your your 7 different husbands. Which one taught you the biggest lesson, and what was that lesson?
I think to a certain extent, they all taught me lessons on, you know, I need to take care of myself and my daughter as a priority. Now, the last one, I really finally owned that because I find that, okay, it's not selfish to do self-care and book myself in for that massage once a month. And right. It's not selfish to talk to my therapist. And it's not, and it's like, I can speak up for myself and that's okay. And I, you know, if I, it's like, I need to be able to talk. Yeah. I need to be able to find somebody I can talk with. But I need to not be afraid to express my opinions. And yes, you can do that without coming on too strong. And, you know, there's you can learn how to communicate with each other. But, you know, just knowing that I'm enough and I'm a really good person and I'm this amazing person. And it's like I told that to the ex when I saw him. And the last time I saw him in person was April of this year. And he would just roll his eyes when I'd say stuff like that. It's like, excuse me? And, you know, during the whole negotiation of the last few years, you know, we'd try and, okay, let's try and be nice in our letters. We couldn't see each other for a whole year because of COVID. So there was no visiting. And so it's like, okay, now we're mad. Okay, now we're trying to be nice to each other. So it's like for a while, it wasn't until, you know, later 2022 that I really said, okay, this really isn't working. We're getting a divorce. It's like, you know, so I was away from California for a couple of years before I really said the D word. And, but I think now it's like, you know, I am taking care of myself. I am saving. And I started for saving for retirement when I was still with him, but I am happy with myself. I go on my walks. I'm just doing better. And so I would have to say I learned the best lessons that are going to stick with me. You know, I've learned lots of little lessons, but again, you know, the little lessons about if somebody's hurting you physically, call the police. Don't wait, you know, just call the police and get yourself out of there if that's what you need to do, and protect yourself and protect your kids. It's like, I didn't protect my daughter like I should have. And no, I was never beaten to a pulp, but any physical violence is not good, you know, any amount doesn't.
Any of them.
You don't have to end up in the hospital and for it to not be good.
Right.
And thankfully, I've always been employable and I've always been able to find jobs and work and support mm-hmm. myself. So,
right.
You know, I think it's important to be an independent person, even if you're in a relationship, you know, and working together with that person. But, you know, be happy with yourself, because when you know yourself really well and you come across that, you know, I'm really happy with myself, then you're probably going to find a person that's better suited for you anyway. Not probably, you will. And your relationship, if you're in a current one, should go better because, you know, but again, standing up for yourself is like the biggest lesson I've had to learn. So I highly recommend that.
Right. 10 out of 10. What did he say when you mentioned divorce? Because I know that had to be like, how dare you?
Exactly. You know, it's funny. Well, not funny, but when I moved, because I was planning on, because like, okay, the year before I moved, I'd said, okay, we need to start having a plan for retirement, downsizing. You know, I need to stop having to pay for all the house stuff. So let's start having a plan. Months went by and then, you know, then COVID hit, you know, we're shut down for months. And I was like, oh, I got to get out of here. And my daughter's going, come move up here, be near us. Like, okay. And I, you know, I wasn't going to move till like the fall. So several months out. So I would have had more time to talk to him about it. Something came up. I was able to get an apartment a lot sooner. And, you know, okay. I said, okay, I'm going, I'm bye, basically. And so the timing of letters between spouses or not, you know, when you're in prison, you don't always get each other's letters. And I always got his a lot sooner than he got mine, but you know, whatever, the timing is never cool. And he couldn't call me and I couldn't call him. And So he finally got, and he just blew up. And instead of talking to me, it was like, he, number one, he assumed I was leaving him for good instead of asking, hey, you know, what's going on? And it's like, okay, well, now you need to get the rest of your stuff out of the house, and I'm going to get people in there, and we're going to do. So it's like he just went into commando mode. And it's like, dude, we could have just had a conversation, and I would have assured you the relationship was fine. It's like, I do want to work on some things, you know, but again, I would finally get the courage to bring up things I wanted to work on. And it's like, well, a good wife should just be grateful that you've got this house, and a good wife, you know, her husband shouldn't have to tell her these things that you're asking me to tell you. It's like, I just want to know why you like me, you know, after all these years, you know, why do you like me? It's like, I think these are simple things. And he just couldn't. It's like, a good wife shouldn't, you know, guys should, what, guys don't say that. I go, yeah, guys do. And, you know, I think by the time he, you know, we actually said the words, you know, it was almost like we didn't have to say it. It was just like, okay, now we just have to, you know, figure it out, because this is going to happen. And by then he was probably already resigned. It's like, we both knew that the relationship was not working, and it probably wasn't going to be fixable. And, you know, when you say stuff to me, like, cause we had a 2-day family visit in the fall of last year. And, you know, I'd said, and I think by then, even we knew we were going to get a divorce. And I was like, it's like, well, you know, why didn't you want to kiss me more? Or, you know, why didn't you want to be more affectionate? It's like, you should have tried to be prettier. It's like,
right.
I'm not ugly. I'm just not a size 2.
Right. Right.
And again, and it's like, and I would get on him. It's like, well, why didn't you support my book? It was bad timing for me. You know, I'm trying to work on my legal case. It was just bad timing for me. It made me look like a loser. It's like, and again, it's like, I put my money into my book, not his stuff. So yeah, it was just, the writing was on the wall by the time we actually said the word. And it was just basically, okay, how are we going to deal with the house and stuff like that? And, you know, it's not like, you know, we didn't have any kind of prenup or anything. So it's just like, let's just assume nobody has any money and nobody owes anybody any money. We're just not getting along. And in Oregon, you can get a divorce really fast if people just sign off on it. So, you know, that was nice.
How long did you all stay married? So how long were you married?
We were married technically like a little over 20 years.
Whoa.
I know. That's why I thought, oh, this is going to last forever. But, you know, he has always, he's never been shy about saying that he's selfish. Because he grew up as an only child and he's a spoiled brat. But I know that he talks, you know, he has, because when you're in prison, you can't own anything in California. So his house, and, you know, there aren't any funds in California. It's like his house is in a trust. So it's like, I'm working with the other trustee. And she goes, yeah, he said you're writing a scathing book. I go, well, how did he even know? It's not like I publicly announced it with his name.
Right.
So it's like, well, it'll be not nice and it'll be truthful. I'm trying not to be scathing. I'm using examples out of his letters. So I'm just using his words.
Right.
If it's scathing, it's scathing, you know, but it is an important topic, like you said, and more people are having the voice to talk about it. And, you know, it's like, why can't people just get along? Why can't people just be nice to each other? If you want me to be nice to you, why can't you be nice to me?
Right. So, you know. 20 years is an awfully long time.
Yes, it is.
So how, and then it's 20 years while he was in prison. So I know that had to be hard on you. So how is it being a prison wife?
It's difficult. You know, you don't. And I, again, for the longest time, we did get along, but I don't think we would have gotten along so well if he had lived at home, knowing what I know now, because he is very selfish and, you know, he wants things a certain way. I know that I had told him, it's like, okay, we could never work together in a business because I work differently than you do. You know, I got papers on my desk from my clients and he would have nothing. You know, everything is clean. You know, you have your secretary clean up your office at the end of the day. You know, it's like, and I'm not going to be your secretary. And so it's, you know, it's like, yeah, it wouldn't have worked, but it was difficult because here I am, I'm doing, I would tell him about all the major hits. I go, okay, well, there's another leak in the roof. I got to fix it. It costs this much. And, oh, okay, now there's the raccoons have pulled a hole open in the roof. I got to fix that. Oh, now there's a, you know, the house was 100 years old over that. It's like, so everything kept falling. All these trees and limbs were falling and, you know, falling into the neighbor's yard on their car and falling into the driveway. And, but again, just the reality of visiting, you know, it's like you're visiting a prison. So you might only have to drive an hour, but sometimes it was 3 hours. Sometimes it was 5 to 8 hours, depending on where in California he was. And, you know, it depended on how crowded the room was.
Mm-hmm.
You might only get an hour or two visit. And fortunately, like I said, for the last 10 or 15 years, he lived an hour away, so I could go every weekend. And I would spend, you know, several hours on a Saturday or a Sunday. I wouldn't spend both days because I had things to do. But again, you know, you're in a giant room with a lot of people and you're having to buy food out of the vending machine and you're allowed a hug and a kiss at the end and the beginning. And you can hold hands during the visit, but, you know, obviously that's all, you know. People tried to do more. We never did. We're just two old fuddy-duddies. But so, you know, you're just sitting there talking the whole time, and it's very interesting. It's very weird. I wouldn't recommend it to somebody who's young. And, you know, it's like, you know, obviously, unless you're, you know, you're with the guy and he goes to prison, you know, after you've been married and stuff. But it's like, if you're 20 and you're just now meeting the guy and you're not married yet and totally committed, like, don't go there. It's like, it's hard. Yeah. It's hard. And, you know, and usually you're helping to support them. Because, you know, there's quarterly packages, and if they write letters, I mean, mine did write me letters every day, so that was not so, you know, you're paying for writing supplies. So if they don't have a paying job, you're putting money on their books so they can go to the canteen, and now they have these little tablet things, so sometimes, you know, I didn't have to, you know, I paid so that I could text him. He paid for his own, like, if he wanted to watch news shows or little movies or things like that, but for the longest time, all the phone calls were collect. And in the last year or two, they made it so the inmates could put money on, you know, use their money and pay for phone calls and stuff. But he usually used his phone call time for his kids. So I didn't talk to him that much by phone. So it's a really weird way of life. And, you know, it's a really weird way of life. And there's a lot of people, but I mean, there's a lot of family togetherness in there. So I see families really trying to keep it together. And, you know, there's parents coming to visit, there's girlfriends, there's, you know, spouses and stuff, and they're bringing their kids. So it was really good to see that, you know, everybody's trying to keep the family together. And I know COVID really wreaked havoc on a lot of families. And he likes to blame our breakup on COVID. I say, thank you. It was a blessing because it helped me open up my eyes. I would probably still be doing that and still stressing out about the money because now I'm even closer to retirement and probably wouldn't have been closer to doing it if I was still paying for all his stuff. So,
right. Yeah. And you did that for 20 years. That's a lot.
I did. I did.
It's expensive. Do you ever remember a time where you drove out there and maybe something was going on in the prison where he was maybe on punishment or something and you weren't allowed to see him?
There was one time where he got in trouble for something somebody set him up because he was not, you know, real. He wasn't in any gangs. He wasn't, you know, trying to start trouble or anything like that. And like I said, he always had a job and he was well respected. But I know one time I went, but my office was like 2 minutes from the prison. So, you know, he was in trouble. And so I couldn't see him right away. There were other times, sometimes you just go there and it was so foggy, they couldn't, you know, they wouldn't let the guys come out to visit. And I know sometimes I'd driven like when he was like 3 hours away. It was like Valentine's Day weekend and there was some emergency on the next group of buildings over. And so all the staff had to go there. So all of us had to leave visiting. So, you know, it was usually not anything because he was in trouble. You know, sometimes he was out on a medical appointment and wasn't going to come back in time. So they made me leave. It's like, yeah, but usually not in trouble. He just didn't get in trouble.
Right. Well, that's a good thing. I'm trying to remember where I saw, I don't know if I read it, But I was looking at a situation where a lady, she went and she was upset. She drove, I think her husband was in Louisiana. She drove from Alabama maybe to go visit him. But something happened where not him himself, but his floor tier or whatever was in trouble. And they all got on lockdown. So they canceled all calls, all visits and everything. So she was upset. And I think she went to the warden. And I don't know if they ever let her, you know, I don't remember if she said they let him see him or not. But I can imagine 20 years, you had to have some interesting, you know, visits.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, because even when I lived an hour away, something could have happened by the time I got to the, you know, in that hour that I drove, I'm going thinking I've got an appointment at a certain time, everything's fine. And maybe something does happen and they send us all away. You know, so even in an hour, something could happen. And I remember one of the times he was at a Southern California prison, it doesn't matter. It's like, and they used to have like play areas separated, you know, like, there was a little barrier around like a big mat so that the parents and their kids could play on this mat thingy. And usually there were no problems in visiting because the guys kept their personality problems and gang problems out of the visiting room. But there was a husband and wife who got into it and started punching each other in the little children's, you know, their kids weren't even sitting there. They were sitting there talking and they started punching on each other. So we didn't have to leave, but we all had to stay seated and they had to haul them out. But it's like, oh my gosh. And I've seen, you know, I've seen people get arrested, both the husband and the wife, because she's smuggled in some drugs. And, you know, now they've seen it on the cameras and they've just pulled it out of your bag of popcorn, you know, or they've seen it and now they have to go search the guy and, you know, whatever. So you do see weird stuff, but, you know, we usually are so tuned into our conversation that, you know, we're trying to ignore everybody else and trying not to listen to anybody else. So, but yeah. You know, I've seen parents, you know, they're sitting there and their two or three kids are, they're all at the same table and they're not punching each other, but they're just having this argument. And it's like, okay, number one, I don't want to hear that. And number two, their kids are watching their parents like argue really vehemently. And it's like, you know, that was sad. So, you know.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah. That marriage was your longest one, the 20 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So and then the 5 years to court, you know, it's like I visited for 5 years before said, it's like, oh, we should get married. It's like, and here's the proposal. Oh yeah, we should probably get married. It's like, okay. It's, you know, you're not going to get down on one knee because it's the prison visiting rooms of you. And it's like by that time, and I didn't care, you know, I was in my 40s. He was a lifer. It's like, you know, okay, I'm too old. There's not going to be any babies because I'm too old by now. And, you know, it's like, and there weren't even any family visits at that point for lifers in California. They changed that. So it's like, you know, I'm doomed to a life of just sitting here in the visiting room. But I was okay with that for the moment. But an inmate with a wife has more clout with the staff than just a girlfriend. So if he did need me to be his advocate as, you know, okay, well, he hasn't gotten his mail for 3 weeks, you know, what's going on? Or, you know, this wrongdoing is happening. You have more clout as a wife than you do as just a girlfriend. So, you know, yes. You know, again, it's like, I wouldn't have needed to be married just because by then it's like, I didn't care. But you know, I think it was just more a politically correct thing to actually get married.
Right. To be, and I actually thought that you had to be married, like to have certain kind, like certain visits and stuff. I thought they actually had to be married.
The family visits, yes. You do have to be married and it has to be like immediate family, but like parents can, you know, it doesn't have to be just spouses. Like a parents can go visit their person in prison and just that's a family visit. They just have to be immediate family. So, you know, if he had had siblings, they could have gone in there, you know, but a girlfriend just can't go have a family visit.
Gotcha. Even if she had like a kid for him, did that count?
No.
Wow.
Yeah. No, the couple has to be married. Yeah.
Interesting.
No, I imagine that like if the person had parents and then got her permission to take in the kid because that's a blood relative of the guy in prison, you know, that probably would have been okay. But if she wasn't married to him, you have, because I had to show my marriage certificate every time. Yeah.
And the part about the lifer. So I didn't know that. So,
oh yeah,
with him for 20 years. And at one of those parts, you said lifers couldn't even have visits.
Well, no, if you have life without parole, you can't have a family visit. They took those. Yeah, you could have visits, but they used to have family visits up until like 1996. And then they took them away from people with, you know, even 25 to life. You know, if you had a life in your set, you know, yeah, no. Because they didn't want you procreating because you're an inmate, so you're bad.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So yeah.
Family visits must take part in another like place or something. So you can like
they either have like a row of like small apartments. They're like two bedrooms.
Oh, I get it.
Or they have like a little prefab home, you know, like away from the visiting room, but usually near. I know he said when he was that old Folsom in California near Sacramento, they used part of the like an old hospital rooms for the family visit room. So they weren't bad, you know, if people, you know, kept, you know, took decent care of the furniture and stuff and didn't rip up all the games. But yeah, they were fine. You know, had a fully equipped kitchen and two bedrooms and a living room and, you know, better TV than I have. So
wow. Now see, that I didn't know. I didn't even realize that, because I think in Angola here in Louisiana, there are little homes, but I didn't know. I didn't realize. Well, I think the homes are for the people that the sheriffs and stuff that live there. But I think there may be homes as well for the visits. But I didn't realize that's how family visits worked. Okay.
Yeah. And every state, I'm sure, is different. Mm-hmm. Now, I know he was at one prison and the family visits were like little cottages, or they were probably attached, but they each had their own little yard. So they were like little cottages, like at the beginning of this row of the inmates' buildings. But, you know, they've all been different. The place we were at where we had family visits, they had apartments that are, you know, if you're going to go visit in the big visiting room, you go through that door. If you're going to go family visit, you go through that door, you know. So,
yeah. Wow. So if you were to, let's say, meet another guy that was really nice and sweet, but he was in prison, would you do it again?
No.
No, it's a lot of work. It's a lot. It seems like it's
a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And I need a person, you know, I'm doing fine on my own. If there were going to be another person in my life, I need him to be free to like do activities with me and, you know, cook with me, take walks with me, go to the movies with me, you know, talk to me when I, you know, when I want to talk. It's like, there's too many restrictions and, you know, I just want the full experience. I can only see you for a few hours on this day. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That has to be tough. So what is the second book about? So the first book was about the first five husbands and a little bit of number seven. Yeah. What's the second book about?
The second book is all about the narcissistic abuse from number seven. It's how we met, you know, how it is we got married, and then, you know, what started going wrong and why I didn't see certain red flags sooner. And, you know, and the whole drama, it's, you know, combination of the house drama, because that really became a huge issue for us. And the whole, like, you know, here's some of my needs that are not getting met. And so the relationship issues that everybody goes through, relationship issues. So it's a combination of that kind of stuff. And then there's going to, okay, here's the last straw. Here's lots of quotes from his letters where he was just clearly really mean. And, you know, I just finished writing the chapter on, you know, here's what the divorce process was like. And the last chapter will be on, here's my life now. And here's how I've moved on. And, you know, I'm doing okay. And it's okay. And it's going to be called The Prince Was Wrong, because his nickname is The Prince. And narcissists think they are always right. You know, I would try to tell him, it's like, you know, you're not always right. Oh, well, everybody else seems to think I'm always right. And, you know, nobody else questions my answers. It's like, well, I'm questioning them, you know.
Right.
Wow. I'm opening my mouth. You know, I should subtitle it, "The Mouse is Out of the House." my full Leo fierce crone self is just out there now.
So do you think after going through everything that you went through, do you think you will ever find the courage to love again?
I do, because I am really happy with myself. So somewhere along the line, there will be somebody who sees me for the wonderful person I am, and I will see him that way. And we will see each other as equals. And that's a big thing for me now, yeah. Because number seven clearly does not see women in general, and he clearly didn't see me as an equal. And I can't stand that. And I have to have that. And, you know, you need to be okay that I'm writing a book, and you need to be okay that I practice magic, and that I like to talk to fairies, and I like to talk to ghosts, and you need to be okay with the way my life is, because I'm not changing it. And hopefully you'll be interested in some of those same things, but I think love can still be out there, yes.
Right. That's a,
I'm not in a hurry. I'm not right. in a hurry. That was often a problem as well. It's like, I got to jump right into the next one. I got to find that best dad, you know, for her. And it's like, yeah, she didn't need that. She didn't want that.
So looking back in retrospect, was there really like true love in any of your situations?
You're going to make me cry. Oh, at no, the no, moment, no, it's okay. I always thought there was. I always thought there was. And I'm learning, you know, here's another thing. My sage advice is, even somebody my age can learn new things and, you know, learn to look at things certain ways. But because now it's like, I have a bucket list of what I want that partner to be like, you know, based on, you know, here's the kind of life I'm creating for myself. And, but yes, I thought I was in love, but it was mostly probably the hormones raging. And well, we can't have sex unless we're married and we like each other and we go to church together. So we might as well get married.
Right. But, you know, it's like when you think about it, I can hear myself and, you know, some of your stories. And the sad part is, like, a lot of like people looking outside, looking in, they may judge whatever situation, however they want to judge it. But a lot of times, right. All we want is just love.
Exactly. Yeah. And it. You know, if he could have just acknowledged that I was an amazing person, or that I am, or if he could have just acknowledged that I was okay the way I am, you know, that would have helped. He could just never see that.
Right.
If I wasn't, because he would start to say something nice and then he would end it with gaslighting. It's like, no, you don't get to qualify the nice thing you just said. So,
right.
Yeah.
But you know what was important, and the only person that needed to see whatever that you were looking for was really just you.
Right.
So a lot of times, exactly. You know, a lot of times when we're looking for love, we look, like I told you, and this was actually what I learned in one of my podcasts that I had. Just a okay. couple ago, and then we were talking about relationships, and we were talking about, that's why I said I can hear myself in some of your stories. And a lot of times we look for validation from other people, and I guess it hurts us right. so much because we never get it. And then you're just right. trying and trying and trying to find it. It just, you know, it doesn't come. And when it does come, we package it up as something, you know, else. So I understand.
Well,
I completely understand.
Thank you. Yeah, the message I always got, no matter who, it's like that I was not enough. And I actually, you know, one of my husbands, you know, he was like a delivery person, like for a milk or an ice cream company, whatever. And I've always been a bookkeeper. So that's a desk job. You know, you're using your, you know, I'm thinking all day long, I'm crunching numbers. Like, well, you don't have a real job because you're just doing that. It's like, because I'm not physically active. At my job? Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. You know, whatever. But yeah, it's like, and I think the thing is, you have to be I'm agreeing with you. So you have to really be happy with who you are, because then you're way more likely to attract the person that you want, or the person that's going to be the best compliment for you.
You got it.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, going to be, and it's like, even I tried for a minute, a few dating apps recently, and then turned them off after a minute. And it's like, I'm just going to put it out there. It's like, no, I never said I was married 7 times, because, you know, that's not the first initial dating app chat.
Right.
It's like, on one of them, I finally said, I'm a witch. Just, you know, it's like, it's because I would say I'm an other in religion, and I'd get all these Catholics. And it's like, yeah, no, we're not going to match.
Right. It's not going to work.
No, it's like, you know, I'm just going to tell people in a very friendly, positive way, this is who I am. You know, if you don't like it, move on. It's like, right. You know.
Either you love me or you love me not.
Exactly. And, you know, I can take care of myself. I've proven that. So, you know, I can support myself. The cats and I are happy, but I, you know, I'm starting to make more friends where I'm at. And so that's a good thing.
Good. That's awesome. Yeah. You are a great person. You know, you can tell when someone has a good personality and a good spirit, and the right person will definitely come along. I don't know, like, kind of, you say you're a witch. So I don't know, you know, what to say. Like, I don't know. It's you know, like when you're doing religion, you say God's going to send somebody. I don't know what to say. You like, what's just, that? Like a Wiccan?
My higher power or the divine universe. You know,
right, okay, so
somebody will show up. Yes.
Yes. The universe will definitely send someone to you. So, I mean, I like paranormal stuff too. So I watch Discovery Channel all day, watching ghost stories. And
oh, wow.
I love it. So that's one of my other passions. So
cool.
Can you tell everyone how they can follow you and how they can purchase your books?
Sure. The book is either on Amazon or all the other, you know, platforms. I also have a website called dragonhillbooks.net. If they want a hard, you know, me to sign a copy, then I would mail it out. My email, so there's an email for Dragon Hill Books. I also have Joanne, no E, at midlifemagic.biz. I have an Instagram and a Facebook author page under Joanne Fawcett Author. So, and we're going to be doing a Joanne Fawcett website pretty soon for the new book. So it's all good. So yeah, I love to stay in contact with people.
Okay, awesome. So those books, definitely, I know they're going to be interesting because of, you know, the stories that you have. Like I told you, I actually approached you because I saw your
Thank you.
And I was, you're welcome. I saw a post and I was just reading. I clicked on your profile and I was like, wow, this is interesting. So I said, let me just see if she will respond. So I do thank you for
responding.
I thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
This is good. A lot of times people see differences, physical differences, but they don't realize that most of us, we're all the same. We all want the same things. Love, respect, you know, loyalty, just the basic things. And we're more alike than we are different. So I love to hear different perspectives. I love to hear different situations. And your story is awesome. So I'm glad you did write a book.
Thank you. I am so glad you reached out to me, because it's like, I'm used to pitching myself. And it's like, oh, look at somebody wants me. They're reaching out to me. This is cool. So thank you so much. And thank you for the work that you're doing. It's not easy hosting a podcast.
Yes, thank you. And of course, a helicopter wants to pass.
At least my cats are quiet.
All right. Really? Okay, but again, thank you, Joanne.
You're
and
welcome.
Thank you to the guests that have listened. Joanne's story, like I said, was awesome from the beginning to the end. It was interesting. And actually, I had to go off key from our questions, because everything you said was just like so intriguing that I kept going on more for that, and I never got to my actual questions.
Well, if you ever want to have me back on, we'll get the rest of your questions taken care of.
All right, good. We can do that. But I mean, the questions I asked, it worked out, because I mean, I'm learning and listening for myself, but I know I have a lot of people that deal with, you know, men in jail and stuff, so I know they probably wanted to know that more than anything. So again,
it's interesting. I think it's a comprehensive chapter about what it's like.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I hope you all enjoyed today's show, and I hope you all come back. If you have dealt with, you know, have a prison husband or a prison boo or whatever, prison wife, you know, let us know how your experience has been. We heard how Joanne's will be, was. So again, thank you. So like I always end my show, if the Lord says the same, I'll see you all next week. Thank you.
Thank you so much.